Like the conversations you hear on Basic Folk with your favorite roots artists? Then join Back Catalog Listening Party, a weekly podcast where you can dig deeper into their catalog. Top songwriters like Mary Gaucher, Chris Smither, Dar Williams, and Lizzie Ngo join host Mother Banjo and Anthony Earig to talk about their old albums with a live online audience. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and learn about attending live tapings at backcataloglisteningparty.com/join. Welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. It's your hosts. I am Cindy Howes, here with Lizzie Ngo. Hi, Lizzie.
Hi, I'm Lizzie Ngo, and everything's going to turn out great for me.
Today on the podcast, we talk to our Lila's friend and family member, Amy Helm, who has a new album, Silver City. We are quite thrilled with our interview with Amy Helm.
This is one of our most emotional episodes ever, and also one of our best. I just feel like we got on the call and we immediately had a vibe with Amy, and it's probably because we loved her album so much and we love her so much.
Before we fully get into Amy Helm, I want to ask you, dear listener, if you have signed up for the Basic Folk newsletter, you can do that at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. It's a once a month email that I usually remember to send out that lets you know what's happening with the podcast, who's been on recently, who's coming up.
We are scheming and planning behind the scenes here at Basic Folk HQ, and there are a lot of exciting things that are going to be coming up in the next few months that you are going to want to know about.
If you would also like to follow us on our social media, you can do so at Basic Folk Pod. We are on all the platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and until the United States government shuts it down, we are on TikTok.
You guys, let's make hay while the sun shines with regard to TikTok. They really do not want us on there. And I know why. It's because the hoes are getting free. Every night I go on TikTok and I see six or seven women saying, here's how I got out of toxic patterns and reclaimed my feminist power. The government does not want to see that happen.
You can also make a contribution and support this nonsense at basicfolk.com. There's also a link in the show notes where you can make a financial contribution. You could send us like $40. You could send us $5 a month. You could send us $100,000.
We deserve it. I have actually big news. I bought a van. There's no easy way to say it. I bought a van.
Wow.
I am going to be rolling around in my van all over the country, picking up bandmates, scooping up friends, going on adventures, visiting national parks, maybe even robbing banks. I don't know what I'll do because I've never owned my very own vehicle before. And I feel like sky's the limit in terms of what I can achieve now that I am a van owner.
Could you tell us a little bit more about this van? Like, is it a passenger van? Is it a sleeper van?
So this is critical for my car insurance. It is a passenger van, not a cargo van, though it looks like a cargo van. It is a passenger van. It's a Ford Transit.
Amazing.
American made, baby. American made.
Oh, my gosh. Hootie and I were driving to Canada.
Wait, when did you drive to Canada?
Oh, we went to Cape Breton Island. Oh, my gosh. It was so beautiful for a vacation.
Incredible.
We want to go back for the Celtic Colors concert.
There is nothing gayer than you and your wife driving up to Cape Breton for the Celtic Colors Festival, and that's powerful.
So we are almost in Canada, and we're driving through Maine, rural Maine, and Hootie, like, is, like, pretty patriotic. She, like, loves America.
God bless. So
we're driving, and all of a sudden, there are all of these American flags on both sides of the road, two-way road, and it had the Pledge of Allegiance, like, in sections, like, it's like,
lock the doors.
I pledge allegiance, couple of flags, to the flag, couple more flags, of the United States of America. And it, like, just kept going and going and going. And I was like, where the fuck are we? And Hootie's like, this is too much for even me. And then moments later, we were in Canada. Sometimes people leave comments on our Spotify. And one of the comments that I left unpublished, but I should probably publish it. They were like, I thought this podcast was about music. I listened and they were talking about politics 3 minutes in. Disappointed.
Disappointed.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Congrats to us. To me, that's a 5-star review.
Oh, great.
Can I say something about politics, though?
I wish you would.
Actually, all of the things that we're talking about wrap up into the same theme, which is women being in their power. Okay. We're going to talk about periods. We're going to talk about politics. We're buying our own vans. We're buying our own things. We're claiming our independence. We're learning about the phases of the moon. And you can't stop us. And L-Y-L-A-S. Love you like a sis.
Our guest today on the podcast is Amy Helm. Lizzie, please do us the honors.
Amy Helm has had one of the most fascinating lives that any person can have. As you might have guessed from her famous last name, she comes from roots music royalty.
And when Lizzie says famous last name, she means that Amy Helm is the daughter of Levon Helm, the beloved late drummer for the incredible, groundbreaking Canadian-American group, The Band.
And in her own career, she has created a new lineage of musical tradition, family, great songwriting, poetry, and a feminine power that emanates off of her. We're talking about her new album, Silver City, but we're also talking about songwriting. We're talking about grief. We're talking about single parenthood. We're talking about family. We're talking about being on the road. We're talking about how our bodies change over time and how that makes us different as a vocalist and as an artist. Those were the takeaways that I found most powerful from the Amy interview.
And what's really interesting is that this record was produced by Josh Kaufman, who is a man. But Amy said in our interview that Josh was the one that was like, all of these songs are about women. You know, this is a theme here. Let's explore. Powerful, powerful collaboration between those two.
One of my favorite parts of our conversation, speaking of powerful women, was getting to talk to Amy about her friendship with Mary Gaucher and the co-writing that they've done and the conversations that they've had around addiction and what it's like to like be close to Mary, talk about the like deepest threads of your life with someone so wise and creative as Mary Gaucher.
Let's check out this interview with Amy Helm. We'll hear clips from Silver City throughout the interview. Listen to this interview and then go listen to Silver City. I think it'll just supercharge your listen. So, all right, let's get into it. Amy Helm on Basic Folk. Amy Helm, welcome back to Basic Folk. We are so excited, beyond excited, to have you here.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful thing to be here with you both.
Well, so often time to time, Lizzie and I do interviews together on Basic Folk, and they're very special interviews. They are called Lila's interviews. And Lizzie, what does Lila's stand for?
Love you like a sister.
Aww. That's right.
We may or may not ever allow a man to be on a Lila's episode with both of us. I don't think so. I think it's just for the girlies.
Yeah, and maybe Lyle love it.
Okay, Lyle can. I mean, Lyle has an open invitation yes. to Basic Folk.
The one exception to the rule.
Let's get into this record. We can barely contain ourselves.
Oh my gosh. You guys are making me feel so good.
This is just like an administrative housekeeping question. Kind of. So the album Silver City was again recorded at the Barn, and we are all still patiently waiting for that Mexican desert vacation album that we are hopefully getting an invite to. The Barn was built by your dad and Garth
yes.
Hudson.
Yeah.
Emotionally and operationally, can you talk about the responsibility you feel for upholding the legacy of the Barn, which is to be a place of community and opportunity for all musicians? Like,
yes.
What does the team look like that keeps the Barn going?
The team is the most incredible group of mostly women, and my my dear brother, Brendan McDonough, who's been there since, you know, since my dad first started the Rambles. He's the production manager. And we just have this extraordinary team of people that keep it rolling. So I'm very lucky. I couldn't do it without the community that we've built around it. We have an incredible group of volunteers that run the barn, and it's just a great community. And so it's easy to keep a place lifted up when you have that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Community begets community.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, this is a, I'm kind of like hesitating and moving because I'm trying to keep my answers short, because of course that I could talk about this just for an hour in and of itself, but it's been really interesting to be able to wear the hat as a touring performing mm-hmm. artist, and then take that off and put on the hat of venue owner and operator. And, you know, the first 6 or 7 years after my dad passed in 2012, we just kind of didn't do much with the room. It sat pretty much vacant with, you know, scattered shows here and there, mostly from the Ramble Band. And, it's been quite an education. It's really informed how I think about the music business. It's informed how I think about other people's careers and my own. And it keeps sharpening my my focus and my intention to maintain the barn as a place really built by a musician for musicians, you know, and of course for music fans. But it's, I never want the barn to be pretentious. I never want it to be unattainable. I never want it to be on the tastemakers list. I want it to always be a place where every musician and everybody feels at home and really witnessed and respected. And anyway, so it's been really interesting, cool education the last couple of years to step back from touring, make a record, do a lot of writing and focus on the barn. It's been interesting.
So today I revisited our 2021 conversation we had, you and I, Amy.
Yes. Yeah.
We talked about where women existed in your musicians' experience. And I was so thrilled to learn that Silver City is a tribute to women's voices. And it began as a series of intimate letters and song. And I read that it kind of started with a song that did not make it onto the record titled Young Katie.
Yeah.
Which is a song you wrote for a young fan who died of an overdose. So that song was the muse. It didn't fit in with the others. This songwriting as letter writing is very like intriguing to me. Why was letter writing your chosen vehicle to commune with the voices of the women that we find on the record?
That's such an interesting question. I've never really even thought about that. You know, this all kind of happened. These songs emerged in a organic way without a theme. I didn't have a theme in mind. I didn't have any real idea in mind of what I was writing about. I had taken a creative writing course before really diving into the songwriting. And I had been doing a lot of memoir and reflective writing. And I found that for me, sometimes a quick letter to somebody or even to myself is kind of the way that I get to the truth the quickest, I think. And that wasn't necessarily a constant practice that I was doing in that writing class, but maybe enough of that was happening on the natural, just with my, you know, freehand kind of jumping into these different assignments and going for it, and then finding it easier to get inside of a writing assignment with the intention of a letter. And because a letter also, I think for me, sorry, I've interrupted myself to add to that, that a letter pulls the process in a little bit. You can't get too analytical in a letter. You have to like keep it clear. And so I think that was maybe part of how the songs were coming out that way. And I didn't really realize that I had this theme and this narrative of letters to women and letters to younger versions of myself until I was really almost complete with the record. It surprised me. It was something that these songs, I felt like they were demanding entrance in a way that I hadn't really experienced as a writer thus far. So they kind of had their own way they wanted to come in, you know, into the world.
Oh, that's so cool. I really want to hear that song, though. Like, how difficult was it not to include the muse of the entire album? Like, when are we going to get to hear Young Katie?
Yeah, I want to record Young Katie. I that song was very special. That was really, that was one too that I know we've all experienced this as creatives, when something just comes in and it's not, you're just the place for it to come in through, and you hope to do your best service to it to get it right into a pencil and onto the paper and the melody and everything. I really felt her around me. I was really tuned into, I only met her twice. But there was something about I think that the psychic space that COVID afforded us, I'm sure you both had experiences like this too. Like, things that were very important that came to my mind about myself, my family, people in the world, there was this quiet, present, meditative feeling and how everything was hitting me during that time. And her passing, you know, it was one of so many in this wreckage of addicts that just, and especially young people that just lost their lives to their addiction during the pandemic because of the isolation and couldn't get to meetings and all of the things that kind of fall in and help create that. But there was something about hearing that she was gone and having just met her these two times that it just opened up something in my heart. It opened up it made me think about myself too. Not necessarily as in the throes of addiction, but all the things that I survived and sort of the, you know, there, but for the grace of God go I, mm-hmm. which is, you know, how did we make it through this? And how did she fall? How did she slip into that and fall off the side there and get lost to that? And just kind of opened it up for me.
It's kind of like reflecting on the ways we're all vulnerable in one way or another.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, with this girl, Katie, like, you know, we can all relate to being like, to meeting someone that you're excited. Like the first time she met me and she was just a wreck, you know, she was just a wreck. And she just was crying and hysterical and just high as a kite, couldn't land. And then the next time I saw her, I could see from across the room that she was clean. Mm-hmm. She was just beautiful, you know, and in her body. And she was so proud of herself. And those two mirrored experiences, I feel like there's not a single one of us walking alive on this earth that can't relate to that in some way, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In your writing about this album, you also describe it as an exploration of womanhood and all of its complexities. So I'm curious, where did you find simplicity? Were there moments where you were surprised to find clarity in all of the complex layers of womanhood?
yeah, interesting, right? I mean, I think just telling our story keeps it simple because all we have is our own, you know, our own small path and our own story to tell. You know, the complexities of motherhood could probably be its own, forget an album, that could be its own genre. But I did find just kind of picking the stories for me that were times that I was very vulnerable, like my divorce, coming through that, coming into a friendship with my ex-husband and a blended family and raising our kids together and now being part of his wife and his child's life and, you know, speaking the truth about that from the painful all the way up to the triumphant was kind of a nice, simple stepping stone. That was maybe one of the next record, one of the next songs, the song Silver City that came into focus after Katie, which is, was one example of kind of finding something that felt easy to speak about.
We traveled fast when we were young. Windows down, radio on, and you took my hand. We spoke our vows. The October sun was setting low, and we had a picture of spring.
I actually have a question about Silver City that I'm going to jump right to. So you write that this song is about the grief of divorce. And like you were just talking about, you and your ex-husband have worked really hard to be friends and have a lovely blended family. So like in thinking about that, one takeaway that I had is that all families look different. And
yes,
for many decades, the goal was the nuclear family, which is defined by a household consisting of a father, a mother, and their children, all in one household dwelling.
Nice for some.
Which, fuck that. After what you have gone through, what your origin family looked like, and what your adult family look like now, what is your opinion of the nuclear family, the pressure to be in one, and where you ended up?
My opinion. I mean, it is so amazing to be alive today and look at things change, isn't it? Isn't it incredible to see, and we have a long ways to go, but to see the acceptance and to see, you know, ignorance get cracks, the little cracks in the pavement, cracks in the ceiling, and education and acceptance and wider kind of open views coming in about who we are and who we love, what we look like. You know, I it's been really cool to be part of that. I mean, my opinion about it is just that, I guess I'm just grateful to be in this time that we're in now, you know, raising my kids, meeting other families, all of us coming from different places, but the, you know, everyone has one thing in common. Every parent has one thing in common. You want the best for your kids, right? You fall in love with your kids in a way that you've never been in love before, and we all want the same thing. And then being able to share that across all lines and all definitions is kind of the coolest thing. So, yeah.
Hmm. So the album bio states that the songs on this record are like letters written to younger versions of Helm or to other women that she's known. So these songs, like listening to this, digging in, looking at the lyrics, these songs contain wisdom for women at certain stages of their life. And as we are all aging and thinking about our bodies and our minds changing, like, I see you, perimenopause, you are coming for me. Like, where does wisdom of older women exist for you, either like on this album or in your life?
I mean, I don't think that I would be, I mean, I can't imagine having put one foot in front of the other and gotten even halfway across the room if it weren't for various experiences through my life, if it weren't for the women who have influenced me, believed in me before I believed in myself, saw something I could be before I knew to even dream about it. And when I say that too, I don't just mean, you know, I'm blessed to have some older friends that are just a bit older than me who have become like my, you know, anything happens with boys, anything happens with anything having to do with the kids, emotional, physical, spiritual, they're my first phone call. And then there's all the women that I've met that I've gotten to play music with, like all the, you know, just even women that I've gotten to sing with in a choir in New Orleans when I was 30, 31 years old and completely lost. So I was so lost. I just, people didn't think I was lost, but boy, did I feel lost, you know? And I think that my younger friends inspire me too. And that's why I think it's so important too, that we all stay open to the solution to ageism isn't just that, you know, we don't discard women over the age of 35 or over the age of 40. It's like, there's this whole world of connection to be discovering for a lot of women. And I think that the focus on age and that you become irrelevant or disposable after a certain age is unfortunately so deeply ingrained in our culture, as we know. But really, like, what a great thing to sit with a bunch of women who are from their teen years up to elders and like talk about different solutions to thousands of different things. And you'll hear something from a 24-year-old, I will, that opens my mind up to a whole other thing that I didn't think about. So I'm really into, you know, being 53 and thinking about this a lot, seeing it a lot in our culture. And, you know, I love staying curious about things, and I love feeling connected to all ages and connected to all the ages in myself too, you know?
Okay. Speaking of all the ages in yourself, when we were talking about this interview, Cindy was getting emotional about not only your music, but it was heightened by the fact that she's about to get her period, which is not something we ever talk about on Basic Folk, even though we have two hosts with uteruses.
Yeah.
So we're going to start a precedent of talking about it on the podcast. How have the different reproductive cycles in your life, like from menstruation to pregnancy to menopause, perimenopause, all of those, like, how do you feel that affecting your work? How have those different cycles shown up for you as a performer, a touring artist, et cetera?
I mean, so what a brilliant question and theme. I mean, I feel like you guys have to have a whole separate show.
We really should do like a segment. We could call it the red tent or something.
Oh my God, the red tent.
I mean, there's so many. I mean, especially as it applies to performing, right? Oh my God, I have like from the most absurd, hysterically funny, like, you know, postpartum, you know, trying to get dressed for a gig postpartum to intense hard stuff that that just popped into my mind. I mean, I could tell you five tales that would probably span the emotional curves there. But I mean, you know, having kids was for me one of the most powerful, defining experiences of my life. Doesn't mean that every woman has to have a kid. It means that we all have these incredible spiritual experiences that drop in a thousand different ways. And for me, the actual act of childbirth, which I was able to do, I was able to have natural childbirth with both boys. And that changed how I took the stage significantly. I mean, that was after I had my first son, I stepped back into these rambles that I was playing with my dad. And I remember standing there and standing on stage and coming back up to the section of a song that I hadn't trusted myself to like really nail that chorus or really get that high note or whatever it was that I was reaching for. And I was like, oh, fuck this. I just went through that labor. I just like witnessed this child, this like incredible manifestation of love that actually I got to carry it and bring it into the world. Like, fuck it. Nothing else is going to scare me now. I'm not going to let myself spend another moment in fear. Of course, since his birth, I've had many moments of fear, but that was definitely a turning point for me. Like, I feel like I kind of turned towards a different door, you know, as a performer. And pregnancy is, and kids are powerful. Losing pregnancies is powerful. I lost a pregnancy very far along in between the boys and had to perform, you know, 6 months pregnant, belly out, and then come to the same stage in a small town in front of the same audience, you know, with the baby gone, and stand there and handle the awkward what happened and meet the people that I had met a month ago. And that was intense. You know, the way that our body as women, the way our body reveals things about ourselves, reveals our stages. And then most recently, now going through menopause, which no one talks about, the hot flashes were, I can't lie, they were a fucking drag, but
dang it,
I invested my whole look, all through the spring. I didn't do many gigs, but it was all halter tops. So that's my one piece of advice.
Yes.
Don't give a shit what you, I mean, forget all vanity. Put on something easy that you can sweat in and just kind of roll with it. And one last thing, because see, I told you you could have your own show. I could talk about this all day.
I could listen to this all day.
Well, anytime you want to talk, call me. I love talking about this stuff. You know, I have an older friend. She's a real mentor of mine. She's incredible. She's like 12 or 13 years older than me. Her name's Lori. And she was the first person when I turned 50, she goes, oh man, she goes, you think you loved your 40s. Wait till you get into your 50s. And now she says, you think you dig your 50s, wait till you're 60. You know, and she talks about menopause and she tells me things about it, like without embarrassment, without hesitation, right? So it's important to pass these things along. And very quickly, and for any woman who is in menopause or, you know, preparing to be in menopause, which is, by the way, many women of many different ages. I just met a young woman who's 29 who just had to undergo a complete hysterectomy for ovarian cancer, and she's healthy and she's okay and she's going to be okay. But she went from being, you know, regular 28, 29 year old girl with her period being completely catapulted into full menopause. So,
wow.
You know, it happens. It's a lot of ages experience it, but there's some really incredible research being done about it. And I wish that I could remember her name and the name of the book, which I will find and text or email to you after. But for instance, she's writing an entire book about the possibility. She's a neurologist of a completely different neuropathway that gets developed as our bodies shed the need for the old one, right? So we used to have all these connections from our brain to our uterus and ovaries for menstruation and for pregnancy and birth and all of that. And that as we go into menopause, that is changing. It doesn't mean that we're obsolete. It doesn't mean that we're over. It doesn't mean that life ends. It doesn't mean that we're not sexually active, sexually attractive anymore. It doesn't mean any of these things. And in fact, they're starting to do some research in neuroscience that is suggesting that there might be an entirely other brain mapping that takes its place that we don't really know about yet.
I just got chills of excitement about that.
Yes. Yeah. That connects to empathy was the one takeaway mm-hmm. that I took from this article I read about this book. They call it the grandmother.
Wow.
There's some catchphrase where they use the word grandmother because you're kind of coming into this different knowing and empathy about the world around you.
Wow.
And I'm done. Sorry. That was the longest I've ever talked in an interview in my life. Oh my gosh.
You're a legend. Maybe this is a new segment on the podcast. We have to talk about our bodies more. Our bodies ourselves, basic folk edition.
Yes. Yeah.
I've been trying to think about ways how to get my wife involved in basic folk. And I think it would be fun. She's a geriatric doctor.
Oh.
Get her on and talk to folk musicians about yes. their bodies. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions for the doctor?
Oh, that would be amazing.
So, Amy, you're the mother of two boys, Lee, who is 17.
He's 16. Yeah.
16.
Yep.
And Huey is 13.
Yeah, he just turned 13.
How have you tried to make the feminine and women's voices part of their growing up? And like, has your writing and work on Silver City changed that for you?
You know, they're such sweet and present and really caring boys. I think that they really get it. They really respect me as a single mom. I think they respect women. I think their generation is really in a different place already, just even amongst their peers, you know. I think they understand and respect women in a way that even with our age differences, the three of us still did not have the faces of women in the world in different job positions in the media, in the arts and entertainment that they're able to see now. You know, I'm really proud of them, and they We haven't talked about this record as much as the last one. I think it's because they're a little bit older. Mm-hmm. You know, they like it and they're proud of me. And like Huey's like way into TikTok and he wants me to start a TikTok account and stuff.
Let's be friends on TikTok.
Yeah. And he sent my, one of the singles to all his friends on like a sixth grade group chat when it was coming out, which was really sweet. But
that's nice.
You know, they're into their own world too. Yeah. And that's cool too. They're good kids. My older son is deeply into music. So he's, he's playing now full time and plays in a bunch of different bands and that's his thing. So we do have a different kind of communication about it too, in that regard. Yeah.
What has Lee said recently that has blown your mind? He's a very deep.
He is a deep. That's right. We hung out at Fresh Grass, right? Isn't that where you met? That's right. Yes. Oh my gosh. What has Lee said that's blown my mind? I can't even, the last conversation we had, he called me to tell me, this is after I dropped him off at school to go on this upper school camping trip, like duffel bag, sleeping bag, backpack. He's got his drum pad. I give him a hug. And like 25 minutes later, the phone rings. He's like, "Mom, just hear me out." And then comes the whole entire thing of how there's a lot of productivity I could be getting into. I've got to practice. There's a lot of things I could be doing. And so that's kind of the last thing he did that blew my mind was
He had a plan.
And I talked him through. I said, maybe I shouldn't say this. Well, no one from his school will probably see this, but I said, he texted me from the thing. I said, "Is everything good? Are you having fun?" He said, "No, but I really appreciate you're trying to look at the bright side of things and teach me how to do that," which I thought was very sweet. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Silver City was again produced by Josh Kaufman, who worked on your last album, and we love Josh K. He, to me, has like a sensitive touch whenever the project calls for that.
Yeah.
What kind of perspective did Josh, a man, bring to this lady record?
Josh is the first one who said to me, "You've written, this is all about women. This is all about women in your life and about versions of you." I didn't even get it. I was like, my brain was just, you know what I mean? I was just kind of like it. So Josh, I just have a shorthand with him that is a kind of creative chemistry that it's just one of those special things. I mean, perhaps I think that he does this with everybody and it's part of why he's such a great producer, but we can just complete each other's sentences. So, you know, it just felt like if we were hunting down the truth of something, whether it was him editing, being an editor for my lyrics or finding the melody or finding a groove on something or a section of a song, we just both know immediately if it's kind of in or out, you know? Mm-hmm. And Josh is very, you know, he's got his wife, Annie, is incredible. And they have a daughter. They have two little boys, too. But I think he's very deeply into, deeply respects women and just kind of, I don't think he had to work to get there at all. He just kind of is that, you know, he's just one of those great people that wants to hear you bring out the most tender, real thing you can say, you know.
That leads me to a question we were going to ask you, which is like, let's talk about softness. How have you embraced softness in your life? And is it something that has increased over time? Is it something you've had to learn to embrace?
Yes. Yeah, what a great question. Yes, most definitely. And, you know, I grew up in a really chaotic, you know, my childhood, my home life was very chaotic and very unstable at times, and lots of people that were just, there was so much addiction and alcoholism and craziness and, you know, so much of that around me that I think, you know, I think a lot of us who grow up in hard places like that, you know, my anger was part of my survival, right? Because when you're young and people around you are like, the shit is fucked up, you're like, this is fucked up. Like, you have to kind of like say it like you mean it and like speak it and see it. And witnessing it with like a intensity, I think allowed me to get through the times where I really didn't have anyone else witnessing it and saying, you know, I know this is really, this is nuts right now. It's gonna, you know, hang on, you know, yes, you're right. Things are nuts. And so I hung on to that part of myself, I think, for a while, the edgy part of myself. I wouldn't say I'm an angry person towards other people, but when it came to reacting to things that were not cool, I can get a little bit, you know, strong. And I think through my work in, you know, I'm a deep believer in Al-Anon for myself and my own spiritual practices and my experience of becoming a mom and really being able to fall in love in a different way in my life, that has all softened me and made me kind of turn more towards, you know, forgiveness is the most incredible experience of freedom that I've had. So I guess that's kind of it's a loaded answer, but if I'm really going to talk about getting softer as I'm getting older, and to be honest, that would be where I've come from with it, you know.
If it's okay, I want to jump ahead. Cindy, we have a question ahead in the interview that kind of touches on this. I read in an interview you gave Rolling Stone, you said, "I also think that the idea of shaming as the great teacher has taken on quite a role in modern society. But the greatest change happens when we just forgive people and forgive our own ignorance. Once we put ourselves in a position where we can't forgive someone else's mistake, then it's harder to look at our own." So in learning to forgive yourself and others, what has the learning curve been like? And how does a person get good at forgiving?
Well, the learning curve has been like up, down, up. And it will be just because I'm saying this now. And for anybody who listens to this, you know, gosh, I please know that I'm not speaking from any enlightened or arrived place. I feel every day I feel myself slip in my practice of, you know, just trying to do the right thing, of course, you know. And look, you know, dark humor about crazy shit is pretty much how I survived everything hard that I've gone through. So I'll never let that dark humor go, you know. But I don't know. In my experience, I think that, like I said, I think we defend things and get rigid about things when we feel we're not being seen or heard. Mm-hmm. And at least I do. And just to open up and just, I don't know, you know, I tell this to my kids too, is just like, you just start with yourself. Like, I think when we know that we're loved, whatever our experience of faith is, I think faith is really important. I think it gets a bad, I think these words get a bad rap because mm-hmm. of the hypocrisy and the bullshit of organized religion, which have in many ways, they've damaged themselves, some churches and some religious entities have really damaged their reputation, but we need to believe in something bigger than our own thoughts. Otherwise we don't get there. Right. So whatever that is for someone, I think, you know, you have that sense of being loved and being really witnessed and seen and cared for. And for some of us, it's just going out and getting into the woods for an hour that brings that feeling on. But I think it all starts from there. And then we just make a mistake and then try again and make a mistake and try again, right? I do.
So we have another quote from your album bio that says, "Every time I've made a record, I've tried to give my strongest performance. This time I wasn't thinking about the performance. I was rooted in the stories." So this sounds like you were channeling characters in the way you delivered these vocals. So what was the approach for creating like your vocal performances on this record, and how are you channeling the characters with your voice?
What a great question. I think that, you know, we were talking about Katie as an inspiration. And then also there's a song about my great grandmother that kind of tries to fill in what part of her story might may have been as I was trying to uncover it. And I felt like I wrote these songs for them because I wanted them to have some kind of a voice, if only through my voice for a minute on a record, even if only two people ever heard it. It's just like kind of, you know, witnessing someone, you know, I guess this is all about like us being seen and also seeing other people. So I really wanted to like sing it for them. I wanted to sing it for them to really, for their story to be heard and told, I guess, maybe. I don't know if I was intentionally, you know, that's a very reflective answer on my part, because the quote that you read from my bio, but also even as I speak about it now, because I think in the moment I just was going in and then I'd think about my grandmother. I'd think about Kate and I'd just sing the tune. And then afterwards, kind of listening back to it, I was like, oh, okay. I kind of stood in my body a different way in these performances. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like getting a little deeper into that, your voice is an instrument just like any other, but it's also distinct in that it changes with your body as you age. Like yes, I'm a singer and I've noticed that I'm having so much more fun using certain parts of my vibrato in my 30s than I did in my 20s and so on. We all have examples of that. So how would you describe your voice today as an instrument? And are there types of songs that you're having more fun singing now than you did before?
Yes. What a great question. I'm feeling the same thing. I love the seasons of discovering our voices. And knock on wood, if we take care of ourselves and our voices, I don't think there's any ceiling to it. I don't think there's a limit to it. Because I really love, like, I'm continuing to discover places in my voice that I'm excited to go to. I've been listening to a lot of standards, and I've been listening to a lot of Sarah Vaughan and a lot of jazz, which I've always been afraid of to sing publicly. But like when I'm doing dishes and cooking and the boys are distracted with other stuff, I'm like, you know, I love singing along to Sarah Vaughan, just challenging myself to hold out one of those like blooming notes that she does for a long time. Yes, I've been discovering a lot of stuff that I'm getting a little bit more control. I'm working on a little more control and self-care with belting, which has been great. Excuse me, kind of getting more inside of that. And I like my voice more than I did when I was younger. Because when I was younger, I was like, I think I was just more afraid. I just think there was a part of me that was like, what am I doing? Is this right? Is this happening? Am I on the stage? Is this mic on? Is it going to, what's, you know, this is just trepidation. And now I'm like, even when I don't sing it the way I want to, or I hit a bad note, I'm just kind of, I'm digging it. I feel like I'm on a boat ride, you know, I'm kind of like a little more inside of it and luxuriating in your tone a little bit more, you know?
Ooh, yeah. I love to hear that.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a couple more questions about particular songs on this record, and I want to talk about Baby Come Back. First of all, your publicist sent us the video of you and your band performing it in the kitchen, and I feel like I could do an entire episode just on that video. I loved it so much.
Thanks, but Cindy.
Let's talk about the song. So the song Baby Come Back, it delves into the raw emotions of reclaiming yourself after a heartache. Okay, so you think about that and you look at the title, Baby Come Back. Who is Baby? Is Baby the person that left? No. Here's the twist. Baby, it's you. It's Baby Amy.
Right.
You flipped it, which is very clever.
You freaked it, Amy. You freaked it.
So I mean, I love that so much. It is so good. How is Baby Amy these days?
I have never been happier. I gotta say, I'm really so great getting older for me. And I'm very happy. I'm very filled up. I mean, I get to talk to two incredibly intelligent, beautiful young women like yourselves about this work that I did. Like, that's quite an honor. I really mean it. I really mean it. Yeah.
We're honored to be sitting here with you. We really, really are.
Yeah. So Lizzie and I were texting like basically all morning about this interview. And one thing that we feel grateful for is to be able to like have this podcast so that we can talk to you, because it seems like you have so many, like you have, there's so much going on in your life and so much going on in your work that it's like really worthy of digging into. Mm-hmm. And even we were like struggling of like what to ask, you know, but to just know that there, this is, the honor is ours, because to be able to do a deep dive on your music and this album, it's huge for us to be able to do it.
Thank you.
Is everyone crying?
Yeah, a little bit.
I feel like crying.
Cindy, you have a really good question about like friendship. I feel like that could be, we're running out of time, but I really want to make sure we get to your friendship questions.
My friendship question?
About Amen. Amen anyway.
Oh, okay.
Sorry to prompt you, but I really want to hear that question talked about.
Okay, so, okay, Amy.
Yeah.
As last time, this is the Mary Gauthier fan club.
She's the best.
So one of the themes on the song Amen Anyway is about being around those who handle fear and lack of faith with drugs and alcohol, and it was co-written with Mary Gauthier. This is actually the second, my math might be wrong, but there's at least one other Mary Gauthier, Amy Helm song about addiction. I'm talking about Cotton in the Cane on your last record.
Yes, yeah.
And Mary was the first person, and correct me if I'm getting details wrong, that you spoke to about living alongside people with addiction. So what is it like to talk to Mary Gauthier about addiction, and why is she such a safe place to discuss and to write about addiction?
Mm. Well, you know, Mary has walked, as she's shared in her book and in her interviews, you know, her recovery is such a huge part of her story and her experience and the way that she teaches and shares her art. So she invites it. I mean, Mary's a healer.
You mean she's asking for it?
Yeah, she's asking for it. She'd love that. You've interviewed Mary, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure. She's just like, I watch her. I just got to do a writing camp with her in California. And she, I watch her with people. I watch her with strangers. She's a healer, man. She's just a magnet. People just pull to her, myself included. She's just a very special, very special artist and a special person. And, you know, someone who's in everyone's corner. She's got everybody's back. She really believes in people's capacity to heal and change. I think that's what people get about her. Mm. And writing that writing Amen Anyway with her was really a cool thing too. That was, as was Cotton in the Cane, but that was,
it cool? What a surprise.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Co-writing with Mary Gauthier. We now have confirmation that it's a cool experience.
Yeah, I know.
Love it.
Yeah.
Amazing Grace, is that you by the river? Methadone and handguns in the car. You in the backseat when I called out for a favor behind that Culver County, Alabama bar. You with me on stage when I walked out on the chorus. The band played Shake a Hand, that old gospel song. You in my motel room on the outskirts of Memphis when I knew I had to mean it, move on. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Steps, got a few more left to go. Midnight closing in fast and low. Baby's tired of fussing. There's a little left to lose. You got a letter on the table. You've got old news. You got a letter on the table. You've got old news. He's gone. The girls sing, ooh, baby, ooh, baby, ooh, baby. Hey, now it's lonely in the trenches lately. There's no echo, but you're singing, singing, baby. Bum, 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 bum. Secrets never told. Sealed in lipstick on the end of a Marlboro. Waiting in the ashes like a whisper of a ghost. You got no one left to hold you, no one left to hold. You got no one left to hold you, no one left to hold. Sing, ooh, baby, ooh, baby, ooh, baby. Hey, now it's lonely in the trenches lately. There's no echo, but you're singing, baby. Mm-hmm.
Mount Guardian. Okay, I love this song.
Oh, yes, Mount Guardian.
So it's a close examination of single parenting. You said about this song, I was by myself for upwards of 10 years, running myself ragged on the road and parenting at the same time.
Yeah.
I could fill in the blanks in all kinds of ways in my imagination in terms of what climbing a mountain has to do with being a single parent. But yeah. I would love to hear in your words how that period of time of really like holding it all together as a single parent changed how you operated as a touring artist and a songwriter.
Wow. I mean, I feel like I just got, like, I don't even know yet. Cause I just like, cause now my boys are older and now it's a little bit easier. My guilt about leaving them isn't quite as deep, but I mean, it is, but it's different. Right. I mean, when I was in it, when I look back at that, I just can't even believe I did it. Mm-hmm. It's like looking back at some insane, impossible physical thing that you accomplish, like hiking Mount Everest. I just really like, I was just rolling, man. I just, once I decided that I was just going to do it like this, I would just like, really, I remember getting home from gigs at like 3 a.m. and putting my shit down, taking my makeup off and like getting the lunchboxes clean to prep for the morning and putting out the coffee thing for the morning, like grabbing a few hours of sleep and getting them. And it was relentless. It was relentless, but it was fun in a way, you know, me and the boys are tight, you know. And of course, My ex-husband was in the picture helping when he could, of course. But, you know, when you're doing every meal solo and you're doing that aspect of single parenting, it's a whole other drill. How did it change my writing? You know, I think that, you know, for They require, your kids require your constant attention and constant gathering, right? I love these things in attachment parenting that says bigger, kinder, wiser, stronger, which I learned from an excellent teacher, a parenting teacher and mentor. And it really is the idea that like when any of us really at any age, but when someone is acting out, this comes from the place of wanting to be gathered back in, right? They want to be picked up. A toddler wants to be picked up and soothed and put on your hip. And so kind of coming from that place, my kids have given me such these like incredible opportunities to get quiet, get patient, and not react with anger or, you know, quickness, but to kind of listen and lean in. And then when I don't react the way I want to practice that forgiveness of I slipped off my course here. And like for us to also have that conversation in our family, that's been a really cool thing. Like, you know, hey, you know, earlier today when you said what you said to me, I was stressed about work and I was angry at someone who had said something mean about me. And I was in a mood and I shouldn't have said that to you the way I did. And thanks for letting me reflect on that. So like we've tried to keep this kind of language in our house. And then I think how that's affected my songwriting is that it makes when we become parents, then you start to kind of hear other people's stories and other people's experiences with this kind of what has been for me, you know, I think it's opened up my compassion a bit, you know, I mean, I'm not, and I say that hesitantly because I don't want it to sound like you have to become a parent to be compassionate. It's just been in my experience, learning to listen to the boys and show up for them the way that I wanted to has helped me listen to other people in that way. Maybe I hope.
Yes. If compassion is at the top of the mountain, there are a lot of ways up.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Beautifully said. Yeah.
I am a lady in waiting, rolling dice in Arkansas. Smoked my way through most of the winter, and Mary's song kept the light on in the dark. Alameda, Alameda reads the leaves. She points the narrow way, shelters me, shelters me. It's gonna be all right. It's just a long and hear the song return.
The last track on the record, Alameda. Is that what it's?
Alameda, yeah.
Alameda. Okay.
Yeah, or whatever.
Perfect song. No notes. I want to talk. Charlie Drayton is playing percussion, Celtic harp, and tenor guitar on this track. He is also throughout the entire album, but this is the one that really got our attention. So, Amy, we need to talk about and we need to actually talk to Charlie Drayton. He plays 1 million instruments, has been touring since he was 14.
Yes.
He's nearing 60.
Yes.
And he also actually seems to be the coolest person alive. Like, what is his deal? Can you give him our phone numbers?
Yes. He would be a great person to talk to about this album. He is, you know, he's the greatest partner I could ever have imagined having. We've been together for almost 3 years and he's
like together.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Listen, I was wondering, I Googled Charlie Drayton partner.
Yeah.
And I was like, is Amy Helm coming up? What's going on here?
Well, you know what? He's worse than me. Well, I'm deep on Instagram these days, but But he's like, you know, he puts a post up like once a year. I think there's a little post of him and me up on his Instagram page. And there's one of me and him on my Instagram page, our big public announcement for two middle-aged people who are barely on social media who can't stand it.
Okay, so let's pivot. What is it like to love and be loved by a mystical harpist of color?
Oh, man. You know, he's a very special, special person. I was single for a long time, and it was really, really worth the wait.
Oh,
I was, yeah.
I love love.
Yeah, we are really happy, and he has a beautiful daughter who I just adore, and my kids love him, and her mom is wonderful, and it's really working out. It's really
Wait, her beautiful. Mom is Tom Petty's daughter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Adria. Oh,
a rock and roll blended family. We absolutely love to see it.
It's rock and roll.
I was trying to get ready for this interview, and I was like, looked up. I did not know anything about Charlie. Don't tell him. And I was like, I can't. This guy is too interesting. This is totally going to distract.
He is
already.
I know his resume is overwhelming.
Yes.
Yeah, it's annoying. It took me a long time to like. I was a bit shy to sing around him at first.
You, with that voice that we've been talking about
You're
for
so
an
sweet.
Hour.
See, I should have called you for a pep talk on
Miss
some of those
Thing.
Early. And all my friends were like, you're going on a date with Charlie Drayton? I was like, by like the fifth or sixth person that said, I was like, yeah, like, fuck off. Like, yes, I'm going on. You know, I got back to my defensive, edgy 14-year-old self that I'll never fully part with.
You need her, actually, because people need to sit down and think about who the hell you are.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
But no, Charlie's incredible. And wonderful, and has been such a huge part of this album. He co-produced the Mount Guardian track, was very much a him and Josh, because that one was eluding us a bit. And then we tried that song, actually. Mount Guardian was the one that we tried it like four different ways. We recorded it four different times.
Whoa.
And then we got that recording, and then I was like, and then Charlie added that second bass on the whole intro. I didn't check that out. And Annie, Josh's wife, is playing like the bass part behind it. So it's this kind of interweaving thing. It's pretty, pretty hot.
It's really groovy.
Yeah. And Charlie's very special. I mean, being around him is always an education. And then getting to be with him in the studio was like, wow. Just his preparation and the way he listens. Like, I've like never prepared for a gig in my life the way he prepares for one song. I was like, holy shit, he's incredible. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We didn't even know the depths that that question was going to go to. I love it.
I love it.
I think we have just one more like music question and then some fun would you rathers to close out.
Yes. Yeah.
So whether it be big or small, what is your favorite thing about folk music?
Folk music compared to all others?
Yeah, just your, any, like within your sphere of experience, it doesn't have to be like scientific across the board, just like in your experience of it as an artist and as a listener, like what makes it special for you?
I would say the community.
Mm-hmm.
The community.
That's what I was going to say.
And the conversations.
Yeah.
That's what you were going to say, right? Because you don't have as many like folk purists who are going to like give you shit unless you're playing the Philadelphia Folk Festival. And boy, do I have a couple stories about that one.
I've never been invited.
But you know, yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
That's that on that. Okay, you are an iconic guest, Amy.
I have to tell you, honestly, I really mean this, like making this record and putting it out and the vulnerability of putting out a record and then having both of you be this interested in it and think it's like worth this level of conversation is like really very, very moving to me beyond words. I really mean it. I thank you for your time and for listening to it with an open heart. Like what a gift as an artist to be able to have you guys respond to it that way. Thank you.
Oh yeah. We feel the same.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you ready to answer some silly questions?
Yes.
All right. This is a game called Would You Rather. I'm sure you've played it before.
Yes. I play it with the kids in the car all the time.
All right.
Okay.
Would you rather be reincarnated as a dolphin or a chimpanzee?
Definitely a dolphin.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Would you rather never eat ice cream again or have to eat ice cream every single day of your life, even if you didn't feel like it?
Maybe never eat ice cream again.
Ooh, this is...
Because can't you always break a rule?
These are hot takes.
Oh, okay. All right. With the... Yeah. You can break the rules. Would you rather travel to the Arctic or to the desert?
Well, the Arctic, because I just went to the desert for the first time. So now I would love to go experience the Arctic.
Was it the Mexican desert with Charlie Drayton?
It was the Mojave Desert with just me, myself, and I, because he was preparing for Australia, but it was amazing. Yeah.
That's amazing. Very nice. Love.
Would you rather have the power to read minds or the power to see the future?
See the future.
That's what Cindy said.
You need to ask this last one because too silly.
Would you rather shave your head or shave just your eyebrows?
Eyebrows. Because you can always get them tattooed back on.
So
right? True.
You have an answer for everything.
I'm on. I'm on fire.
Well, you killed it.
That was great. Amy Helm, this has been a perfect interview. We're going to stop doing interviews now, and so should you. This is the last interview any of us will ever do. Thank you so much.
Thank you both so much. I hope to see you guys both soon, sometime around.
Yes, would love.
Out on the open road, that would be great. A lie-less hang in person.
Come to Woodstock. Come do these interviews out of the barn sometime to other artists.
Oh, we're in.
Oh, you know what could be a cool thing to do? WDST, which is the local radio station here, they do an annual event that I got to be one of the honorees. They choose like 10 women in the community of all different, like there was a woman who started the hospice program up here, all different people, artists and non-artists. And they honored the women at this really cool event at the radio station. And I was talking to them, I was like, we should do this at the barn next year.
Oh, yeah.
And have it be like a thing. It could be cool. Like maybe you guys could come, I don't know, do something. I don't know how that works politically. If you do like something that then gets broadcast on DST or if you have your own, I don't know, but.
For sure.
We should talk to them. I really like Asia. She's
great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
She's really cool.
Yeah, the whole team. There's a lot of young women there running the scene over there and it's a cool, could be an interesting thing. Anyway, whatever. You're welcome anytime, interview or not. Would love to have you guys there.
It's so great to talk to you. We will be knocking on your door soon.
Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you.
Bye, Amy.
Bye.
Thanks. This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Alex Stanton does our music. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. Check us out on Folk Alley's mobile app or folkalley.com. Go to our website, basicfolk.com, or wherever you get podcasts.
Send this episode of Basic Folk to a friend of yours who is a single parent. This is a really good episode for those solo heroes in your life. Send it to them, make their day.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.